Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I heard about this UFL, and I thought, let me talk to somebody in the UFL. I mean, it's insane. So my agent got me on the phone with Dwayne Johnson.
So you went straight up the flagpole.
I went straight up to, and he called me, and we had a conversation. I pitched him my no goalpost idea, and I thought it was going to happen. He was completely into it.
So, again, your idea is to remove the goalposts entirely from the football.
Yes, remove goalposts. Okay. Yeah, that was the idea. If there's one thing I could accomplish in my life, if I could get rid of these goalposts, I will die a happy man. That will give me more pleasure than anything.
Is that right?
The great Larry David from the Rich Eisen Show, he literally wants to move the goalposts out of the field of play altogether. And he actually was making sense. Like, what does that have to do with football? We stop everything. We have a special play where we kick a ball and it goes through and you get a point or three for it. He started riffing on free throws as well. Like, you stop the action of a basketball game and everybody stands there while the one guy goes target shooting. So I kind of liked his point. I'd never thought about it before, and I can't imagine what a football field would look like without that accessory on each end, because that's what makes it a football field, having the goalpost there. And you know an NFL field because they're the ones with those giant goalposts that defy all sense of gravity and balance by extending up into the heavens.
Yes, it's true, and they're yellow. I mean, Mike, probably, you know, decades on decades ago when you were very young, they couldn't imagine moving the goalpost from the goal line to the back of it. You know, that changed a lot, I assume, for professional football and all that, and, you know, football in general. So, you know, change can happen. Do I want this change to happen? Not necessarily. But, you know, it's not like we've never seen any changes with the goalpost before.
Now, well, I remember back in my day, there was a time where the goalpost had two bars. It was an H, and it was at the goal line.
Yes.
It was at the goal line, and guys ran into it, and then they moved to the single bar. That may have been the first real safety-related move by the NFL. They moved to one, and they moved it back a couple yards, and guys still ran into it. And then they decided, and this was revolutionary, back in like 73, 74, it's not safe to have the goalpost, to have the thing actually, to have a big giant metal pole with a thin element of padding on it in the end zone. So let's move it to the back of the end zone. And that was a big deal. Like, every field, you had to start adding 10 yards. Like, it was this cumbersome math exercise you had to do when you're figuring out how long a field goal is. You always had to add 10 yards to wherever the ball was placed. It was frustrating. And I remember going through that when I was a kid and I was learning math at the time. It's like, why do I have to add 10 to everything? This is difficult. By the way, speaking of my younger days, it was 1974 when they moved the goalpost back. Larry David is now my dad's age when my dad died. And he looks like my dad when my dad was 76. He looks just like him. But for the fact that my dad was still committed to the comb-over bit, you know, Larry David never really tried to do that, but that was a thing in the 70s. You would take whatever hair you had. I mean, there's still one person who's trying to do it now, although it's failing terrible. Him, like on a daily basis. It's getting worse every day. It's like it's melding into this sea of, I don't, but it's like, I don't know what it is. It's got no shape. Yeah. It's got no form. It's rebelling. It's launching an insurrection against the scalp. But my dad would kind of do that. But Larry David looks like my dad if he had decided to go mullet, party in the back, and not try to comb it all to the front. That's my dad in 1998, not long before he died. I hope Larry David doesn't die soon. I hope he never dies. I hope he keeps doing Curb, although he's definitely done. But he looks like my dad. I see him now, and I see my dad. It makes it hard to watch the show. Although my dad wasn't nearly as fun. Nobody's nearly as funny as Larry David, but he looks like my dad. That's my personal information. Way too much information that I'm spilling on a Friday morning.
Well, thank you for not making me the only one, but I think that yours is a little bit less potentially damaging than mine. Also, I mean, I feel like your rant against friendship and, you know, you get an invoice, like that was something that could have been like a Curb bit, you know? Every time I get invited somewhere, I don't see friendship. I see an invoice. La la la. Why do you make me pay for all of this different stuff? I could hear Larry David talking about that.
Well, and I think I vaguely recall something from Seinfeld there where there was like a line like that. I mean, I've got 30 years of watching Seinfeld imprinted onto my DNA. And, you know, this isn't an invitation. It's a bill for $1,000. I think there was a line like that from Seinfeld at some point. And it's right. And you make it just part of your existence and it reflects your own personal views. And I mean, that's one of the reasons why I still watch that show over and over again to this day. Okay. So
and talk about it.
1974.
All the time.
50 years ago. Well, you refuse to watch it. You've got this weird contrarian streak, which is one of the reasons why we get along, because I have many weird contrarian streaks where you refuse to accept my recommendation to watch TV shows and movies that are objectively good simply because I'm the one who is recommending that you watch them. I figured you out by now. Watch Back to the Future. I'm not going to watch Back to the Future. This is me doing miles now. I'm not going to watch Back to the Future. I don't care how good you say Back to the Future is. And like Seinfeld, you won't watch Seinfeld. So anytime I can make a Seinfeld reference on the PFT writer group text thread, I do it. And I figure you eventually see if you ever do watch it. And what will happen is when I die, you'll feel bad that you didn't watch the things that I recommended that you watch. And in your fit of nostalgia for the good old days, which are never really as good as we remember, they're just not. They're not. The good old days are never as good as you think they were. It's just in the past and it's different from now. And there's comfort in that. But when you experience that nostalgia, your way to channel it will be, you know what? I'll finally watch Seinfeld. And when you do, you will be extra entertained because you will say, oh, that's what he was talking about. Oh, that's what he was referring to. Oh, that's that thing that he always said. That's the tractor story. All right. Now.
That's the thing where he got me that food out of the trash.
That's right. That's what we were talking about the time that he actually had that piece of that really good cake that he didn't tell me was garbage and he gave it to me and I ate it. Okay. 1974 is when they moved the goalpost back. I assume it was the result of a vote by owners at the league meetings or whatever they did at the time, a conference room full of cigarette smoke back in 1974. This time around. And let's start on the hip drop tackle because that's the big safety rule of the day. And it has been confusing this week because the NFL clearly wants this out. The commissioner has said it. Troy Vincent has said it. I've heard nothing to suggest there won't be 24 votes. And the hip drop is very simple. You know it when you see it, Miles. Defensive player, typically coming in from behind or at an angle, grabs the ball carrier, twists, and just falls down. You just fall down. That's the way to get the guy on the ground. You just fall down, and he goes with you. He's not strong enough to carry you. He doesn't Mark Bavaro you into the end zone. No one is strong enough. When you take that 250-pound linebacker and just fall down, the ball carrier is going too. The problem is the defensive player lands on the lower leg of the ball carrier, resulting in ankle sprain and or broken ankle, serious injury, missed time, or if there isn't extensive missed time, the player just isn't the same. There's Tyreek Hill on that Monday night getting both horse-collared and hip-dropped. I don't think they threw the flag there. There was a horse-collar involvement, but the hip-drop, legal, that's going to be out. And, you know, the union's against it. That was the development from yesterday. They had a conference call, and Troy Vincent was asked about the league's reaction to the union's resistance, and he made a pretty good point. They always resist. They resist everything. I don't know why, but they always resist these safety-related rule changes. And I think the NFL just views it as background noise at this point. They don't care. The NFL understands the enhanced injury risk. I think we all do. I think anybody that just sits, because I remember when I first thought about it, it's like, what's that? And then it's like, oh, that's what it is? Oh, God, yeah, they got to get rid of that. And I think anybody that takes the time to understand what it really is and understand what it's done to the game, what it's doing to the offensive skill position players, it's a no-brainer. It needs to go.
Well, you just brought up the horse collar, right? That's what Tyreek Hill. And I don't necessarily remember whether there was much debate around that play, but I do remember when Terrell Owens got tackled by a horse collar, right, in the early 2000s, and then he broke his leg. Like, that's kind of what made that play get highlighted as being so dangerous. So the fact that they took that out of the game, you know, or they've legislated it out of the game, and of course, occasionally it still happens, and it's a 15-yard penalty. I mean, it shows that things can be legislated for safety, you know, especially if it is something like that that poses a huge injury risk. And I understand why defenders especially would be opposed to something like this, but it is an issue of safety. And I think when we look at it and we see it on game day, if it's a 1 o'clock game, 4:25 game, or an 8 o'clock primetime game, we can all recognize that this is a dangerous play for anybody that's about to get tackled. You know, whenever I see a hip drop tackle, I start, you know, grimacing because I'm like, oh man, I hope it's not a sprained ankle. I hope it's not an ankle fracture like we saw with Mark Andrews. Like, this is a serious injury risk. So I get it from that standpoint. But I also understand why there is resistance to it. I mean, but if you look at it, man, especially against those QBs, you don't want to see it because that can get them hurt. And the last thing that the league wants is more injured quarterbacks. So yeah, from that standpoint, it makes a lot of sense to me.
And I really am confused by the union's resistance to this because, first of all, how do we know that the players collectively are against it? Defensive players don't want the rule to be changed because they'll say it's already hard enough to play defense. You're taking away one of our techniques for getting a guy onto the ground, and injuries happen. It's football. But if you're an offensive player, specifically if you're a running back, a receiver, a tight end, or a quarterback with a propensity to take off and run with the ball, you want this rule to be changed. This highlights the fact that there really shouldn't be one player's union. There should be a bargaining unit for every position because there are different rights, responsibilities, and interests that come into play. We've talked about in the past with running backs. They need to have their own bargaining unit because they get screwed by the fact that the quarterbacks get all the money. Well, quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, tight ends, if they had their own little groups, they'd be saying, get rid of the hip drop tackle because it creates an undue risk of injury for us. And I look at the union collectively and I just say, how do you not balance it out? Well, you know, guys are going to get fined and they're going to get penalized. Yeah, but guys are getting their ankles broken and we see it. And it's not that hard. It's not as vague. And it's not as hard to spot as that rule against lowering the helmet and making forcible contact with an opponent.
That's true.
This is easier to see. It's not as easy as the horse collar tackle because that's so clear and so obvious when it happens. And a lot of these with the hip drop, Miles, happen in the tackle box. But what the NFL wants, and Troy Vinson explained this yesterday, we wrote something about it, I think, within the past day or two. Even if it's not spotted in real time with a yellow flag thrown, they want to be able to go back and fine players. That's how you correct behavior. You are being fined because we're looking at the film after the fact and we're seeing that you did what you're not supposed to do. Grab, twist, fall. Grab, twist, fall, and land on the player's legs. That's the thing that 20 to 25 times, and there was an issue that came up yesterday during the conference call because a couple of times they said 20 to 25%, and they also said 20 to 25 times. That's a key difference. Their contention is it is 20 to 25 times more likely to cause injury than a normal play. Now, I don't know where they're getting that from. And, you know, we can come up with any numbers we want to support whatever it is we want to do. You don't need numbers for this. All you have to do is look at it. Once the light bulb goes off when you look at it, you recognize. And I hope that folks who are watching this on Peacock and seeing these clips understand how dangerous it is. Number one, you know it when you see it. And number two, when you see it, it is a dangerous play.
I do love the "you know it when you see it" standard. Shout out to the Supreme Court for that. But yeah, I think
Potter
it's
Stewart,
one of those
baby.
Things.
Potter Stewart.
Yeah, exactly. But from the defensive perspective, right? Yes, it is one of the things that makes it more difficult to play defense. So that's why I get it from the defensive player. Because at a certain point, you know, say that you're trying to bring down Gronk. You know, it is a really big situation. It's third and, I don't know, 13, right? And he gets the ball where it would be fourth and seven. And he's got to get these extra 6 yards, okay? And you are trying like hell to bring him down, and you can't because he's Gronk. He is a superhuman. It's like having the Hulk out there. Like, this makes it that much more difficult to bring somebody down because at a certain point, like, how the hell are you supposed to do it? I don't know. But that's why we evolve, right? We have to change in different ways. And I get it from that defensive perspective. But, you know, you want your best players to be available. And so because of that, and because this is an offensive league, it's just, unfortunately, that's the way that it's got to be. It's going to be harder for defenses to make those kinds of plays. And I get the frustration from a defender standpoint, but I also think that if they can do something, the NFL can do something to legislate something so that we can have fewer injuries on game day, I think it's a good idea.
And this is one of the consequences of taking the head out of the game as players adjust how they tackle. You know, it may be a byproduct of the rugby tackle that the Seahawks embraced when, you know, you go in like that, you go in with your shoulder, you go in with different angles, and somebody realized, hey, this is a way to get the guy to the ground. You know, once I'm grabbing this guy around the waist, his legs are still moving. How do I get him down? I'm just going to fall down and take him with me. And the NFL, it was explained yesterday during the conference call, they noticed this as they were looking at the causes of high ankle sprains. This was something the NFL noticed on its own. This was a, hey, look at this. Look, this is, hey, watch this. Like, more guys are starting to do this. And the NFL last year initially tried to get rid of it. I'm surprised they weren't successful last year. That's the only thing that gives me pause about getting enough votes this year. But I think now we all understand it is a serious injury risk. The numbers, even if they are being massaged a little bit, are indisputable. And it's one of those things where you know it when you see it. And, you know, the NFL typically is inclined to change the rules and adjust the rules and tweak the rules in a way that makes it more conducive to gaining yards and scoring points. It fits with everything the NFL's been doing since the mid-70s when they recognized more people are interested in our sport when more points are being scored, especially with the rise of fantasy football. And that's the last thing I'll say on it, Miles. I'll give you the final word after this. There's so many fans that are against this. I think the only way to get the fans to embrace it is to say, think about what this does to your fantasy teams. Think about what happens when you've got a team that's heading for a championship, or you're going to avoid having to get a tattoo of some personal indignity on your arm if you're last in your league, and you lose your best player because of a hip drop tackle. If you're not going to think about these players as humans who want to play football and need to avoid unnecessary risk of injury, think of them as extensions of your own self-interest and your own fantasy team. Your own fantasy team is potentially going to get messed up by a hip drop tackle.
I wish people weren't like that, but I think you're right. You know, you have to.
It's the only way. It's the only way to get them to come around. It's the only way to get them to come around.
I know. I know. And you know, when you're missing Justin Jefferson for, you know, half the season or whatever it was because he's got a hamstring injury, like he also easily could have been the difference between certainly like, or I mean, we could just play the Mark Andrews, right? He got hurt with a hip drop tackle. I'm sure that affected people's fantasy teams, but like, my concern goes to Mark Andrews, the human being first. And I wish who we could be as humans, you know, like these are human beings. They're not automatons. They're not just people that potentially get you money or things that potentially get you money, you know, from your fantasy league. Think of people as human beings, guys. Come on.
I know. I agree with you completely, but that's where we are. I made this point yesterday because somebody who plays basketball made the comment, and I can't remember who it is because I don't know the modern basketball players, because as I said back in the early segment when I was tap dancing until we got you, and after Michael Jordan, I just kind of lost interest. But this player said that he feels like a prop now. And that's, look, whether it's fantasy sports, whether it's prop bets on games, whether it's just straight old-fashioned betting a team to cover the spread or not, athletes have become the dice on the craps table. They're the cards on the blackjack table. They're the little steel ball that's bouncing around the roulette wheel. That's what they are. They're the implements of gambling. So this makes them even more dehumanized. That's my big gripe, and it's always been my big visceral gripe with fantasy sports and all this. Number one, it bastardizes,
too,
and I'm sorry, I'm sorry, Matthew Berry and anybody else out there that's into it. For me, I just enjoy the sport for what it is. I don't need all that other stuff, especially because it warps and twists and changes what it's about. It's not about how many targets this receiver gets or whether this person gets six catches. It's about who wins the game. You play to win the game. You don't play to get Keenan Allen more than 6.5 catches in the game. Hello? So this explosion of legalized betting is only making the players less human in the eyes of the people who view them as the dice on the craps table.
And that's why you all should be in favor of getting rid of the hip drop tackle, because if that's the way you think, then, you know, everybody's going to get more fantasy points and get you more money.
And that's my point. It's the only way to bust through that. Let's just play flag football. Every time I'm going to write something later today, because Peter King called me yesterday, because now that Peter King's retired, I hear from Peter more than I ever have in my life. And it's great. That's the one incident. Although I did say earlier, I'd rather have enemies than friends. I have a friend now in Peter. Like, I'll text and he'll call. And we were talking yesterday about the effort to protect defenseless receivers against helmet-to-helmet hits, and the whole James Harrison thing with Muhammad Massaquah from 2010, and there were three of those hits in like 5 minutes of real time. And Peter wrote a long article about it, and there was strong resistance then by the NFLPA and by certain players to disciplining James Harrison. So this is the way it always goes, and it's a combination of players and fans coming together to resist an effort by the league. And we give the league a hard time, when deserved, for not truly caring about health and safety of players. But then we have these specific instances where the league is trying to promote health and safety of players and the fans coming together in this unholy alliance, because the fans don't care about the players as humans, but they come together to say, just make it flag football. Why do you want to do this? Why do you want to change the game? It really is amazing when you see it happen, but it happens. And this is why the NFL is just kind of shrugging at the NFLPA's resistance, because they've seen it before. They've seen this movie. They're going to ignore the the pushback and they're going to go do their thing.
Yes, they are. And they should. It is funny. I mean, you know, a lot of times fans don't side with players, right? When we think about contracts and all that. Well, why do the players want more money? Yeah, I could never earn that much money in my life. It's like, well, you know, they are trying to get value commensurate with what it is that they bring to the table, right? And so they side with the owners on that, but then they're not going to do that with this because it might make the sport a little bit less violent. I don't know. Maybe we should think a little bit more about that.
And we shall, and we'll be talking about it next week, especially if the ban on the hip drop tackle passes or if it doesn't. The one thing we didn't talk about, the kickoff rule, let me just say this very briefly. I think this proposed for the kickoff change, number one, it is revolutionary. And number two, there's too much there, I think, for the owners to get to 24 this week. I think this gets kicked to May. I think they talk through the issues. They tweak some of the things like penalty enforcement. I know that's still an open issue. I just think there's too much. It's too big of a challenge for the annual meetings in March. This is more of a let's get together and have a good time. Let's kind of relax. When we get to May, the season is closer, and we've seen this before. Different rules get kicked to May when it's easier to just roll up your sleeves and work. And I think that's what they'll do. They'll identify the issues that need to be worked on the next 2 months. They'll get back together in May, and they'll adopt a new kickoff then based upon this hybrid approach where it's like electric football, where they're all just kind of there waiting in their electric football poses for the kick to be caught by the return specialist, and then everybody takes off. All right, we'll take a break. When we return, 66 quarterbacks started the game last season, second most ever, which makes the backup quarterback spot more important than ever. More on that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta. Because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members. Because at Delta, we know.
Refill?
Everyone flies their own way. Delta. Keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I think it takes a special person to be able to learn in this league without getting the reps. And I think last year, some scenarios played out for some guys and some didn't. And it's just tough as a backup. Many factors go into it, but I've always approached my job and the way that I go about my way of work as if I'm the starter. And I think that keeps me in it mentally as well as physically.
Tyrod Taylor, backup quarterback to Aaron Rodgers. He has 57 career regular season starts, and he has a record of 28 wins, 28 losses, and one tie. A much better number two option for the Jets this year than last year, Miles.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, where in the world is Zach Wilson going to end up? Last we heard, you know, the Jets had granted him permission to seek a trade. That was at the combine, what, 3-4 weeks ago, almost a month ago now? I haven't heard anything about any movement on that, which is not really a surprise. But I guess, you know, maybe during the draft, somebody will shoot New York a 7th round conditional pick in 2026 and we'll see some movement.
Well, and the Jets are going to have to pay a chunk of his guaranteed compensation of $5.4 million, I think the number is. They're going to have to. They may have to pay everything but the minimum because they're going to anyway. If you want anything from us, you got to pay everything but the $1.21 million because I just don't think there's anyone out there. Maybe the 49ers, they were linked to him, but they signed Josh Dobbs. The Rams have kind of been linked to him. They have Jimmy Garoppolo. But I think a lot of these teams are going to end up with three quarterbacks around this year. And Wilson is a guy that maybe you just evaluate for a year, practice, maybe some preseason action, and just kind of see what you can coax out of him and how you can develop him into the guy that maybe can become a backup or more down the road. Okay, fill in the blank, backup quarterback edition. Best backup quarterback to serve as a mentor to a starter 2024 is who, Miles?
This is maybe a weird choice, but roll with me on this. I know we saw him at the top of the show and I couldn't hear, but like Jameis Winston.
It's my guy too. It's mine too.
Okay, because Jameis Winston is a vibes guy. And what do you want from a backup quarterback than vibes and positivity and support? And I think that especially for Deshaun Watson this year, there is probably nobody better for that quarterback room than Jameis Winston because he is going to support the absolute hell out of Deshaun Watson. And if there is a situation where Jameis Winston has to go in there, you know at least he's got a big enough arm that he can do the job. But I just think from a quarterback room standpoint, he is going to be great for the Cleveland Browns this year.
I think he's exactly what they need because Deshaun Watson is so caught up, I believe. And you could just see it in his demeanor. Not that he's ever really been all that different, but when you take circumstances and you look at just, it's kind of like, I mean, think about it. His life has been an open book for 3 years. He's still, not that he's blameless. I'm not defending him. I'm just saying, how does he operate in this pressure-packed environment where he is? You've got the off-field issues, you've got the trade, you've got the massive contract that he's not yet lived up to, and it just feels like the walls are closing in. And there's nobody better than Jameis Winston to get him to ignore all that and let's go have some fun. And I have a feeling that he'll say whatever it takes to get Deshaun Watson to maybe laugh, maybe smile, just get loose and be able to go out and play his best football. And Jameis Winston isn't going there with designs on. He doesn't come off as the guy who's got that guile and that secret agenda. And, ooh, I'm gonna be the starter here. I'm going to prey upon Deshaun Watson's flawed circumstance. And he's going to – no. Jameis Winston's going there to help. He wants to help. And I think he brings that quality that – will help Deshaun Watson just kind of calm down. Just that it's the John Candy moment. Do you know the John Candy story from Super Bowl 23 when the 49ers go out for the final drive, what will be the game-winning drive, and everybody's all tight and nervous. And I'm sure I'm paraphrasing, bastardizing. I'm sure I'm getting something wrong, but the way it's been encrypted into my brain is that when they're in the huddle before the first snap of this drive where they're trailing the Bengals and they've got to go down the field and they ultimately do, spoiler alert, the 49ers won Super Bowl 23 against the Bengals on a touchdown pass to John Taylor. Joe Montana says, hey, look, there's John Candy. Because like John Candy was sitting in the front row somewhere and that kind of made everybody relax. So Jameis Winston is going to be the, hey, look, there's John Candy guy for Deshaun Watson and get him to relax in the key moment.
You know, we had a guy like that when I was playing high school football, John Wilson, one of the best players on the team, who the local paper once said he would have driven the bus home if he had his CDL. But there was one game, you know, he came into the huddle. He started seeing Conte Partiro right before like a big drive. But that's the same kind of thing. It loosened us all up. We all got ready, and then we executed the drive, won the game. Like, so that's the kind of thing that actually does make a difference, I think.
All right, next topic on the fill-in-the-blank backup quarterback edition slate. Most faith. Backup quarterback in whom you have most faith to win an emergency start is who?
You know, I'm going to say Blaine Gabbert in part because he plays for the Chiefs and Andy Reid gets his guys ready. You know, I mean, you had Chad Henne there before and he was able to go into the game in a playoff situation, lead a touchdown drive so that Patrick Mahomes could come back in. But I guess it's sometimes a team thing, right? Where if you have somebody that you trust because they're a veteran and they can go in and they can do whatever they need to do, like that's what helps you. And if you have a veteran team like the Chiefs are and they know how to win, then that collective experience can lift up the backup quarterback. So it's more the Chiefs than Blaine Gabbert, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And we have seen that from them with Chad Henne. We saw it with Matt Moore. That was one of the arguments that Tyreek Hill made when he was in his I love the Dolphins, I'm really not all that enamored with the Chiefs phase, and Tua is the most accurate quarterback in football. I put up 150 yards plus with Matt Moore as my quarterback. So it is the system. That's a good one. I'll go with Tyrod Taylor just because we were talking about him already. I think, you know, he's a guy that I'm concerned about his ability to stay healthy week in and week out. But if Aaron Rodgers gets injured on the fourth snap of a game, I feel pretty good about Tyrod Taylor coming in, being prepared. He said that himself. We played that clip. He prepares like he's going to start. He's started enough. He's got the experience. I trust him if he gets thrust into the mix unexpectedly late in the game. Let's say that Aaron Rodgers would have an unfortunate encounter with Dr. Needle, like Tyrod Taylor once did, opening the door for Justin Herbert to start as a rookie when the Chargers were determined not to use him. All right, next topic. Quarterback competition I'm keeping an eye on is what?
I'm going to go with the Giants because I think that Daniel Jones and Drew Lock, A, is interesting, but B, it kind of feels like Daniel Jones might be on thin ice, you know, just based on the way that we've heard that the Giants could be looking for a quarterback at the top of the draft. I don't know if they're going to do it or not. But, you know, when John Schneider, even though it was refuted by Drew Lock himself, when he says that Drew Lock went to the New York Giants because there could be a quarterback competition there and he has a better opportunity, like that, I don't think comes from nowhere. So I like to keep an eye on that one because even though the Giants paid Daniel Jones, it's not like he played up to that standard that he set by signing the contract.
I agree with you completely. Coming off of the torn ACL, there was some chatter coming out of the combine. I think Rich Eisen's the one who said that he got the impression that they've got buyer's remorse. They are looking for a reason to move on from Daniel Jones. And we saw Drew Lock play very well against the Philadelphia Eagles, a team that the Giants will see twice this year. It was that Monday night game where Drew Lock helped the Seahawks pull off an upset win. I think the Steelers, to me, is a fascinating one to watch because there's already been some chatter that, hey, Russell Wilson's only got a $1.21 million non-guaranteed contract from the Steelers. You know, if they decide during training camp that Justin Fields is clearly better, they could just get rid of Russell Wilson. I don't imagine that they're going to do that. Why would you get rid of the guy who you could keep on the depth chart for $1.2 million, right? Yeah. Why would you cut him at that point unless he pitches a Kenny Pickett-style fit and your only move at that point is to get rid of him? You could trade him for $1.2 million at that point. There'll be somebody else out there that's willing to bring him in by the time they start playing games and guys start getting injured. But that one, to me, is just one I'm keeping an eye on because there's a chance Justin Fields is better than Russell Wilson right now. If the last 2 years weren't an aberration, Justin Fields is better than Russell Wilson right now.
Yeah, but, you know, I think if, to your point, Russell Wilson's got experience, so it's not like you don't want him around. And we'll see if Russell Wilson embraces a mentorship role with Justin Fields. I mean, he has sort of tried to throw things out there where he's saying, you know, I'm a good teammate, blah, blah, blah. You know, he texted Kenny Pickett and maybe Kenny Pickett threw the phone because he didn't like it. But, you know, I can see Russell Wilson being a good teammate with Justin Fields, no matter how that quarterback situation sorts itself out. But we'll have to see.
I'm a good teammate as long as I'm the most important player on the team. Well, I'm a good teammate as long as I'm always on the field. I'm a good teammate as long as I'm the best teammate. I mean, it will be a challenge for him because this is a guy who's trying to rebuild himself this year. So let's say he would get benched for Justin Fields. What do you do? How do you act? And he's always been a guy that comes off as very calculating and strategic. What's your play? What's your chess move if Justin Fields is QB1 going into week one? Do you just take it and show that you're a good teammate and trust that maybe Justin Fields will stumble and they'll need you to ride to the rescue? Could he get injured like he did last year when Tyson Bagent came in, undrafted rookie, and got it done? So it's going to be complicated for Russell Wilson, but I think at the end of the day it's simple. If he's not the starter, if something does happen and Fields wins that job, I still think you hang around. You don't demand a trade. You don't start saying a bunch of passive-aggressive things. You just say, Steelers Nation, let's forge, and you move on. We'll move on. Caleb Williams seems likely to be the first overall pick in the draft next month. Where does the drama truly begin then for this year's draft? We'll discuss that next year on PFT Live. This is going way down the Back to the Future rabbit hole, but this is out there. This is proven. This is fact. Now, the woman who played Jan on The Office, I can't remember her name. When they fired the guy, Eric Stoltz, when they fired the guy who was going to be Marty McFly and they brought in Michael J. Fox, they had a problem. The woman who plays Jan on The Office towered over Michael J. Fox, towered over him. So out went Jan. In came whoever it was that played Marty McFly's girlfriend in the original Back to the Future.
Yeah.
There's your fact that you might not have known before today and is completely useless to your life. Well done. Well done. Sorry, Melora Hardin. I hope I'm pronouncing your first name correctly. I never knew who Jan from The Office was. I never knew what her name was. I now remember the name from the credits, but you see all these names in the credits and you don't attach them to who the people are, except for Creed Bratton. because Creed Bratton was Creed Bratton. But for the rest of them, yeah, I didn't know. But well, Miles, the movie you've never seen. See, doesn't that intrigue you now? Doesn't that make you want to watch Back to the Future this weekend?
No. There's so much. I'm not watching anything but basketball this weekend. And when I'm not doing that, I'll be playing MLB The Show 24, man. That thing came out on Tuesday. I'm playing the hell out of it. It's great.
Is that good?
I like it. I bought a PlayStation 4, I don't know, years and years and years ago because I was like, I think I want to play this baseball game. I haven't had a new baseball game in years. And then I got it and I loved it. And then I got a PS5 a couple years ago and the PS5s came out. And like, yeah, I play the MLB on it. I play the 2K Golf. The 2K Golf was pretty fun. I've not done much Madden because Madden's like a little hard. But man, college football 25 or 24, whatever they're calling it. That EA game. EA, if you're listening, I am available for beta testing. Let's go. I can't wait for that thing. I still play NCAA 14 on my Xbox 360. I love those games.
See, all I ever play is Madden. I play Madden while I'm riding my bike. I get an hour a day, and the only way I can get through the hour without constantly watching the clock is to play Madden, because that you get swept up in the competitive environment. And yesterday, the Madden Ultimate servers were down, so I was like looking for other games to play, and I saw the show. I saw MLB The Show, and I thought, you know, I wonder if this is any good. So it's serendipity that you're kind of giving it a lukewarm endorsement, so I probably won't. Every once in a while, I'll buy some other game, play it once, and never play it again, and go straight back to Madden.
Yeah, that's kind of what I Madden? Do, too.
The new Madden game comes out, and I play the Ultimate Team, where you start off with a bunch of guys who are rated 59 and you keep trying to get better and better players. And I won't pay for it. I won't get sucked into that. Oh, just buy this
good
pack and buy that pack or buy this. So I earn it. I got to earn it. I do it the old fashioned way. And you get the team better and better. My team's now a 93 and you keep getting better and better and it becomes a 99. And then the new game comes out and you got to start all over again.
Yeah,
it's this annual lather, rinse, repeat. You go back to a team of 59s and you work it up to all 99s and then you start over again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, with the show, I do the Road to the Show where you take one individual player. And so, you know, I start out with a pitcher and then I also have a second baseman that I, and then it's the same thing. You know, you make him a 99, you know, so you can set home run records, set strikeout records if you're a pitcher. And then I usually go every 2 years. So, like, the last one I got was 22, so now I got 24. And so now I have started that same cycle all over again.
The most fun for me is playing someone else. And you never know who it is. And I don't interact. I don't have the headset. You just
you
play
online. You don't cuss out 12-year-olds?
No. Although it's kind of good that I don't have that capacity because I would. But I mute it. I turn off my speakers. I don't hear any of that stuff. I just want to play the game. But it is fun, you know, because you clock management, you learn a lot. You know, it's a good simulation for understanding what teams need to do when you're up seven, when you're up six. You know, you score a touchdown and you go up seven. Do you take one and go up eight? Do you go for two and make it a two-score game? It's all the analytics stuff that we talk about all the time. It really is a good environment to just reinforce a lot of the things we think about and talk about as we analyze the game during football season. All right, so we assume Caleb Williams is going to be the first overall pick in the draft. And I think that'll be the case. Maybe the Bears trade out of that spot. Maybe they flip-flop with the Commanders. I don't know. The Bears are coming out of this with a quarterback, and we assume it's Caleb Williams. And I think it's going to go Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels. I think those are going to be the first two picks. I think really the draft begins, Miles, at number three with the Patriots. Do they go quarterback? Do they trade down? Or do they address another position? I think that's going to be the key because they have Jacoby Brissett. They've got bird in the hand. Are they going to pursue the other bird, wherever the other bird might be?
Well, I want to go back. Why do you think Daniels is two for Washington as opposed to Drake May? Because conventional wisdom is that Drake May is the second overall pick.
Well, because I've been listening to Chris Sims for the last 3 weeks, who has been saying that Drake May isn't really all that good relative to the expectation and the hype and the perception, and that Jaden Daniels is unbelievable. And we interviewed a bunch of the pass rushers, defensive players at the Combine, and every one of them that we asked who's the toughest guy you faced, if it was an SEC guy, he said it was Jaden Daniels. That it's impossible to get. He's incredibly fast, explosive, elusive. And Sims has Jaden Daniels below Caleb Williams, but he says in any other year, Jaden Daniels would be the number one overall pick. So I'm influenced by that. So maybe it's the Commanders, for crying out loud. The stench of Daniel Snyder has not completely exited the building. Maybe they will do something that Snyder would have done, get fascinated by somebody other than the guy that he should be fascinated by.
Right. And we don't really know the way Adam Peters is going to draft, right? I mean, yeah, he's been with San Francisco for a long time and he was very critical to that operation there by all accounts, but we don't know the way he's going to approach it, right? We don't know the way Josh Harris is going to try to influence the process, because there are things that came out said, you know, he was sitting in on those meetings at the Combine, which doesn't necessarily mean he was trying to exert undue influence or whatever, but the fact that he was there, you know, it says something. So that, to me, I mean, I think if from that standpoint, I think that the draft might begin at two, because we don't necessarily know where Washington is going to go at quarterback, whether it's Daniels, whether it's May, whether it's somebody else. I mean, hell, they could still trade down if there's somebody that they like a little bit later. But I think, sure, they're going to come out of this with the quarterback, but who that quarterback is could then determine a lot about where the Patriots go from there at number three.
That's the game the Commanders could play, and it's a risky game. We can still get the guy we would like later, and we can get more to help our team get better. And we still get the guy we would have put on the card if we used the second overall pick. That's a possibility. And then the Cardinals at four, they made it clear they're open for business. Look, every team in the top five is always open for business to trade down. Always. They're always willing to talk. The question is, who are you going to find to come up? And right now, the Vikings are the one team, because they deliberately went out and got that 23rd overall pick from the Texans. They are looking to package that and move up. And as I was saying back before you could hear me, I think that the Vikings' plan A might have been what we're seeing. We thought plan A was Kirk Cousins and that plan B is go get a rookie. I think plan A was do what they're doing now. And I think they're confident if they get one of the top five or six guys working with Kevin O'Connell, that guy's going to become a franchise quarterback. Because look at what he's done with Kirk Cousins, Josh Dobbs, and Nick Mullins. 400-yard passing game out of Nick Mullins. I think that's all you need to know about what Kevin O'Connell can do. Let's take a break. Aaron Donald opens up about his decision to retire at the age of 32. That's next here on PFT Live.
10 years, 10 Pro Bowls, 8 All Pros, 3 Defensive Player of the Years.
And Rookie Defensive Player of the
Rookie
Year.
Rookie of the Year. 2 NFC Championships, 3 NFC West Championships. Went to 2 Super Bowls, won one, lost one. I'm complete. I'm full. I think the passion to play the game is no longer there for me. I will always love football, but to think about going through another camp and another 17 season, I just don't got the urge to want to push myself to do that no more. I'm burnt out. You know, if anything, the best way to say it, I'm full, I'm complete. I'm satisfied with what I was able to do in 10 years, and I think it's time for me to, at 32 years old, to retire from football and, you know, jump into the next step of my career and my life. And that's time to move on.
If you're watching closely there, you saw his eyes getting a little wet, but he knows what he wants. He knows what he's going to do. I'm full. I love that. And I'm going to use that. That is going to get me out of so many things that I don't want to do because it sounds so good. It sounds so positive. I'm full, right? I seriously, and it was great. I'm not doubting his motives at all in using it. I'm just saying that's something that in the wrong hands could really, really be used to someone's advantage. I'm burnt out is kind of negative. I'm full has a very positive connotation to it. Nope, I'm full. I'm full.
Yeah.
I haven't reached my lifetime limit of fireworks. I'm full. I'm full. I don't need to see any more fireworks. I don't need to see any more steak. I'm full. Literally, okay. I'm still full 3.5 weeks later from that New York strip at Capitol Grill. I still don't want steak, although I'm getting closer, I think, to rediscovering my taste for steak.
Well, if somebody wants to give me steak, I would love that, too. Look, Aaron Donald, I think, is one of the reasons why I am where I am, because look, if you look at the stuff behind me, he was instrumental in earning those things for me, right? I mean, I was a staffer on the Rams, and I have 2 game balls because Aaron Donald is great, because Aaron Donald made plays. So, you know, I certainly take my hat off to him. He's earned everything that he's got. You know, I was covering the Rams in his first year. It was also my first year in 2014, and that was back when you could still watch practice under some head coaches, like the entirety of practice, as long as you didn't report what you saw. And so Jeff Fisher and Greg Williams, defensive coordinator at the time, had made it so that Aaron Donald wasn't going to start. You know, he had to earn the starts or whatever the hell that means, because he was making plays, you know, tackling Adrian Peterson in the backfield in week 1. But, you know, when he finally moved into the starting lineup, a PR staffer was like, you know, you can't report that, right? I'm like, yeah, you know, it's very obvious, though, that this guy is going to be great because he already is, and he certainly was over the last 10 seasons. So certainly my hat goes off to Aaron Donald, and thank you for giving me so many great memories as a member of the Rams.
I remember we had Les Snead on one of our shows at one point during Aaron Donald's career, and he was holding out, had been staying away from the offseason program, whatever, trying to get his contract. And Les said, it's actually a good thing because we can't do a walkthrough with this guy around. He blows up everything. It's impossible to do anything offensively when Aaron Donald is on the field in any capacity, at any speed, at any degree of intensity. He's just kind of throwing bodies around and doing his thing. Now, here's a question for you.
Okay.
The people who are still with the Rams in jobs similar to yours, when they won the Super Bowl, did they get the real ring? Or did they get scaled down dime store version of the ring?
I don't know if I should answer this question. I know the answer, but I don't know if I want to reveal it publicly because I don't know what it says about the organization.
So they got the scaled down dime store version of the ring. You don't have to answer the question.
Right. I'm not going
to. Take a break. When we return, an update on Cameron Sutton, Lions cornerback, now former Lions cornerback. We'll give you the latest next year on PFT Live. Cam Sutton, who played 6 years with the Steelers, signed with the Lions last year. He was released by the team yesterday. He is wanted in the aftermath of an incident that happened in Florida on March 7. More than 2 weeks later, he has still not been found. The Lions decided, 2 weeks into this process, to sever ties with Cam Sutton. I'm told that under his contract, they did invalidate full guarantee of $10.5 million for this year that became fully vested last week. $9 million was already covered. The other $1.5 million vested on March 16. That's all gone now. I've seen the language in the contract. They're within their rights to say, under these circumstances, your guarantee is gone. You are gone. He is cut by the Lions, and he's got bigger issues to deal with now. He's facing a third-degree felony charge. He's accused of domestic battery, and that needs to be resolved first. The NFL will have its say at the appropriate time, but the career of Cameron Sutton, who started every game last year for the Lions, Miles, has been significantly derailed.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I mean, you read the allegations, they're really heinous. And so from that standpoint, I think it's obvious that Detroit made the right decision. And, you know, look, again, they're allegations. And so that criminal process has to play out. But that doesn't mean that Detroit has to sit by and not do anything about it. So they did. They made their decision. And so I guess we'll see how it plays out from here.
And you're right. They're allegations. Cameron Sutton has the full scope of constitutional rights that will be afforded to him at the appropriate time. The fact that he is gone, the fact that he is wanted, the fact that he hasn't turned himself in to launch an aggressive defense based upon the true state of affairs that he has confidence he'll be able to prove, or more accurately, the state won't be able to prove his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, it kind of makes a person with basic common sense say, he must know. You don't just disappear for 2 weeks. If you don't have a pretty good feeling, you got a problem here. But we'll see. Once he is apprehended, once he's brought to justice, he'll have the benefit of all protections of the justice system, and we'll see what happens. But beyond that, the NFL will have its say, and it's not a good look from the NFL's perspective, given the allegations and given the behavior and the aftermath of it. So now a former Lion, that's a starting job on the defense that the Lions will need to fill for 2024. We take a break. We'll wrap up this Friday edition of PFT Live right after this. Bijan Robinson, one of the very few to have a perfect bracket through day one. My son was very excited until Nevada blew a 17-point lead. His bracket was perfect. It was a very small percentage that emerged through the first day unscathed. So congrats, Bijan Robinson. 16-0 so far. It won't last.
It never does. But I mean, the fact that he had Oakland beating Kentucky, I mean, that's a good one. Stanford tried to ruin it yesterday. And who knows if they had gotten that block instead of a foul being called, you know, they actually might have beaten KU. But, you know, my best friend went to KU and, you know, he was a little bit happy about it. So I'll let it go. But the ball was also lying a little bit, right? You know, usually if that happens, ball's not supposed to lie. It's supposed to miss the free throws. But made the free throws anyway. So Kansas on the next round.
Now, so this best friend is a friend that would actually communicate with you properly when a change is made to bachelor party plans. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes. This best friend would do that. Yes. Yeah. Shout out to him. Yeah, he would.
Miles is going to have a cleanup on aisle five today. Miles is going to have some issues. He's going to hear from some people. He's going to have some heart-to-heart conversations. But he's going to say, don't bother me because I'm watching basketball all day today. I'll know where to find Miles if I need him. He'll be watching basketball. And I won't, because when it comes to college basketball, like Aaron Donald on football, I'm full.
Well, that's okay, Mike. We don't need you anyway. I'll be watching. I made a bracket. My bracket's not perfect. My bracket's not even close. I'm in a pool, but we'll see if I even get anything back from that.
I'll watch the NCAA men's tournament the next time West Virginia or Carnegie Mellon are in it. I have much more faith at this point in Carnegie Mellon. Have a great weekend. See you on Monday.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your crave.